The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm gonna have to work hard, but I think I'll go through it pretty smoothly, even though everybody's getting bigger and faster and stronger, but I think I'll be all right. So I get excited about like playing people that are as good as me and stuff, and seeing how you can rank yourself among other people.
I would have had no idea who that was.
Wow.
If it didn't tell me on my computer screen right here. But that's Trevor Lawrence. A lot younger, hair a lot shorter. Speaking of short hair, I finally figured out the cycle. It's every 6 weeks that you and I are fresh
right
off of haircuts. You go every two, I go every three. It's been 6 weeks, it'll be 6 weeks. Although, I would guess that I think mine is too short, although mine is considerably longer than yours ever is. And you probably think yours is too long.
No, I'm good with this right here. If I could just keep it right here in this little, yep, I like it where it's just real tight up here towards the top. So this is just about right. I'm happy with that there. You, on
the other. Real tight, real tight. You look like you just enlisted.
Real tight, soldier. 10-4. Here to report for Pro Football Talk at 7 a.m. Eastern on a Monday morning. Hello, Drill Sergeant Florio. How are you?
Yeah, I don't have the drill sergeant hair. I think back to Gomer Pyle and Sergeant Carter. Yes, I'm old. I used to watch that show all the time. Are you familiar with Gomer Pyle?
Well, Gomer Pyle is, wait, is that the name of the show, or is that Andy and Mayberry? Is that my Andy Griffith's show? Am I right there?
He was Goober.
He was Goober. On that show. That's where I got it mixed up. Okay.
But then he got his own show.
Right.
Gomer Pyle, USMC.
Right.
He was in the Marines.
Okay. Yes.
Sergeant Carter was his antagonist.
I know him more from the Andy Griffith show. That was more of something that came on at our house. Like my mom, put me onto that, at a young age. So that's where I know him from. I know of the show you're talking about, but never really watched it or have any knowledge of it.
They're playing the music already.
Oh, great.
Come on. Come on. There are plenty of people out there who are extremely familiar with Gomer Pyle, USMC.
I guess so.
Trevor Lawrence to Gomer Pyle. Although Trevor Lawrence, he looked like he was getting ready to enlist. What a difference.
That's crazy.
I don't know. You like the short hair or the long hair on Trevor?
Oh, I'm big on the short hair. I've had enough of the long hair. I've had enough of the long hair on like all everybody. I've just had enough of it. I kind of went off on this on the podcast last week. So, no, we broke down Trevor Lawrence. I was like, one of the only negatives I got for the guy is the long hair. And I'm having fun with that, obviously. But, no, I like the short hair look.
I don't know. Is it obvious? I don't know. You seem serious about it. Given the fact that you're buzzed like a peach, I would say that there's some truth in your humor.
Oh, there might be. There was a time and a place where I used to let my hair grow out and do whatever, too. I just can't take it anymore. So I just want a clean cut and looking good that way. Look how handsome
this
guy is.
That's the Justin Herbert. Remember when Justin Herbert got the haircut and he said he looked like River Phoenix in Stand By Me? That's the River Phoenix cut. That's exactly what that is.
It's the same haircut. No doubt. No doubt. I wonder if he'll ever cut this long hair he's got, or is this something he's just going to ride out his whole career?
I think, and I'm only an amateur hairologist, but I think based upon the hairline in that picture and the current hairline, he's in the phase of his life where he thinks growing it long covers up for the fact that it's starting to retreat from the front.
Oh, you think so? Oh, you're a hair psychologist now, too. I didn't know that.
I'm a hair psychologist.
Wow.
Yes,
you are talented.
Oh, yes, I have plenty of theories about your hair and why you do that. But
good,
not
good.
For
yeah.
Hair.
Well, we'll save that for a time where we're not wasting everybody's time.
I think one of the ways that the male species deals with the fact that it seems to be going thin is to just let it grow long, as if that will cause it all to pile up thicker. It doesn't. But he'll have the money to do whatever he needs to do to correct that. The key is though, you got to do it before it's obvious. That's the key. If you're going to do it, you got to do it. Not that I'm speaking
from
experience.
You have no clue whether he's losing any hair or anything under
that.
Thinning. Yeah.
Thinning.
You have no idea.
Trust
me. Thinning. Trust me.
Thinning.
Trust me.
Trust me. I can tell.
I'm a doctor in hair. Yeah.
I have powers.
Good. Yeah. Great. You got lots of powers. All right.
Let's talk about Trevor Lawrence some more. Unrelated to his River Phoenix hairdo from when he was 14 or his longer hair now. It's 11 days away from him becoming the first overall pick in the draft. And because it's been baked in for so long that he's the guy, we really don't talk about Trevor Lawrence very much. It went from, ooh, Zach Wilson, number two to the Jets, and now, ooh, who's number three to the 49ers? And, ooh, what are the Falcons going to do at number four? We forget all about Trevor Lawrence. He reminded us of himself last week via that Sports Illustrated cover article. You talked about the comments on the podcast. We didn't talk about them here. He ultimately, and I assume these are the Sports Illustrated, these are the Sports Illustrated remarks that sparked the discussion. I want people to know that I'm passionate about what I do. It's really important to me. I don't have this huge chip on my shoulder that everyone's out to get me and I'm trying to prove everybody wrong. I just don't have that. I can't manufacture that. I don't want to. That's the Tom Brady / Michael Jordan mindset. And Trevor Lawrence went on to say, I think people mistake that for being a competitor. I think it's unhealthy to a certain extent. Just always thinking you've got to prove somebody wrong. You've got to do more. You've got to be better. Chris, let's start there.
Yeah.
Before we get to his follow-up from over the weekend. I think he's got the right attitude to have a healthy, balanced life. But the reality is, there's always going to be somebody with the same physical skills that you have who does have a screw that's half loose, who is obsessed with everything that everyone says, who looks for any motivation they can find, and like Michael Jordan, will lie about it to himself until he believes it if he has to. Tom Brady, 21 years later, still pissed off that he was the 199th pick in the draft. 21 years later, he's still upset about that. So my point is, that's great. I like the attitude. It's a healthy attitude.
Sure.
But there's a certain amount of torment that you need to have to go from being pretty damn good / great to consistent great all the time, because the consistent greats all the time are driven to that level by the fact that they're always upset about something and they're always driven by something to be at the top of the stack.
Well,
Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. You're not. It doesn't have to be the chip on your shoulder like avenue though all the time. It doesn't always have to be like, oh, I got screwed over, or this guy said this about me and now I got to prove them wrong to be successful or do that. No. I mean, you could be in it for the love of the game and wanting to be the best you can be possibly that way and be an ultimate competitor and still be everything we want or he wants to be as an athlete. I don't think like the Brady and Jordan way are the only way to do it. I understand. Yeah, they got the most rings. That's why we always talk about them and kind of give them, you know, the most credit for this type of stuff, for this conversation, because it seems like they were, you know, no holds bar, cutthroat. They'll do whatever they got to do, you know, to win games. Okay, just because Trevor Lawrence isn't like keeping a list on his mirror that he crosses out with a red marker when people like say things about him, doesn't mean he's not highly motivated to be a big time professional athlete and win rings in his own right. At least not to me.
Well, I agree with what you're saying conceptually, but the problem is you're competing with people who are obsessed with every single little thing, and they're driven by every single little thing. And again, they get no satisfaction in winning. What happens? You win one, you immediately reset, and you're on your way to winning another one.
Right.
Tom Brady, for years, when you ask him what's his favorite Super Bowl ring, he says the next one.
Yes. Well,
that's just the way he is. Nick Saban, the day after winning the national championship, what's he do? He's on the road recruiting again. He's on the road to the next one. And it's not healthy. It's not, but it's successful. Right?
Yes.
You're never truly satisfied. And the fact that you're never truly satisfied is the thing that drives you to keep going and going and going and going. And as we've said before, that characteristic in an adult, the unrelenting competitiveness that causes them to have to win at everything they do, the stuff we see and the stuff we don't see, card games, dominoes, ping pong, anything. In a child, we view that as an undesirable trait. Oh, God, he's got to win all the time. Oh, can you give it a rest, Jimmy? What in the world, Jimmy? What's wrong with you? You stay like that as an adult. That's the key, one of the keys to ultimate success, not just success.
Well, yeah.
I'm talking about success, owning the industry you're in. You got to be a little bit nuts.
Yeah.
You got to be a little bit unhealthy. You got to be obsessed by everything to truly be at the top. That's what I think, and that's what I've seen
right.
in pro football and college football.
What? Right. All right. I got you. I mean, I agreed. I'm not trying to disagree with any of that. All I'm saying is it doesn't have to be the Brady or Michael Jordan approach. Like, Magic Johnson and Joe Montana did okay. I don't know if they had this chip on their shoulder like we talk about, you know, with Jordan and Brady all the time, you know, and I know it's, you know, less rings, it's 4 and 5, but still, it's still the same mental makeup as a competitor, right? And even to that too, Mike, where I'd say, like, you know, we talk about Brady, right, with all of his chippiness and the things he remembers, you know, I think he grew into that. I don't think he was all that competitive or chippy before his NFL career started, or he wouldn't have looked the way he looked at the combine. He would have prepared harder. So I think that's something too to think about, to where, you know, you feel like you get cheated or disrespected a little bit. And that's when you start to get that chip on your shoulder. And that can grow from that standpoint too. And that's where I would look at Brady and go, you know, I don't know if we were saying that about him early on in his career, but it grew into something. And Lawrence, to this point, let's not forget this aspect of it, has had the red carpet. He has been the man. There's nothing to be chippy about. Oh, you're the top high school quarterback in the country. Oh, you're coming to Clemson. Oh, we're going to bench our quarterback for you. You're going to play as a freshman. Oh, you won the national championship. Oh, you're back in the Final Four the 2 years after that. There's nothing to be chippy about when everybody just says, you're awesome, you're awesome. Look what you're doing. You're awesome, you're awesome. Oh, yeah, you're going to be the first pick of the draft. So he hasn't had that yet. I guess that would be a little bit of my argument on the conversation here.
But you could argue that he has because, correct me if I'm wrong, and
yeah.
I don't follow college football closely enough to know this immediately.
Right.
They won the national championship when he was a freshman, right?
You're right. They beat Alabama.
And they didn't win it when he was a sophomore.
No.
And they didn't win it when he was a junior.
No.
And the question becomes, and this is being ultra picky.
Yeah.
How upset was he? Was he mortified that he lost on that stage, or was he just happy to get back to that stage again? And well, it wasn't meant to be. I mean, I think that's the difference. Sometimes you get these guys who say, well, it just wasn't meant to be. It wasn't my time. And then you get the guys who carry that around with them like it's that mark, the mark on the hood of the car. That's the Nick Saban mindset from when he was a kid and when his dad had a service station about 20 miles from where I'm sitting. And his dad was so obsessed with getting that car 100% clean, that mark on the hood of the car that you missed, that one little blemish, that's the thing that torments you. And I don't know, is Trevor Lawrence tormented by the fact that he lost close to the top of the mountain the last 2 years? I don't know. Based upon his comments, I don't think he is. Would others be tormented by it? I think they would be. And I'm just saying that torment, while unhealthy, can be the difference maker when you process what just happened and either take that and turn it into something that drives you to a higher level, or just say, hey, you can't win them all. Look at Patrick Mahomes' comments recently. He learns more from losing than he does from winning.
Right.
Because in losing, the fire gets relit. And I think that's the question. And again, look, it's...
But there's another example.
But I think he acts like it. He acts and says certain things that aren't as that don't make it as obvious that he's tormented.
Yeah, okay.
But I think when he says he learns more from losing, at some level he is tormented. He's just not letting it out.
Sure, I don't disagree with that. And you know, I mean, that's where I think it's too early for us to be judging this about Trevor Lawrence at this point. You know, all I can do by right now is, yeah, he won the national championship. Yeah, he came back and went back to the national championship game, right? I mean, went back to the game. So there's motivation there. And then, of course, lost and went back to the Final Four this past year. And, yeah, they were out-dueled. There's no doubt about that. But also within that, and you want to question, you know, the drive and all that. Hey, listen, we knew this guy was going to be the number one pick before this college season started. He got COVID during the year. He could have opted out and just said, peace, you know, here, deuces. See you guys. I'll see you.
Hey.
He could have. I mean, and he still would have been probably the number one pick of the draft. But he came back because he loves the sport and does all that too. So I think, you know, again, we don't know enough about the guy. This is a cool, fluffy narrative right now. All right. I understand. And I think the big reason we're talking about this is because, hey, there was the talk of the Justin Fields and he didn't love football. And now this happened and people want Trevor Lawrence questioned about this to a degree. And I understand that.
No.
I think that's part of why it blew up.
He said what he said, though. He said what he said.
Right. I know.
Analyzing his own words. And the words of people close to him, his father said to Michael Rosenberg of SI.com, he's not, I want to win a Super Bowl at all costs. Well, good luck competing to win a Super Bowl against guys who are, I want to win a Super Bowl at all costs. Because you're eventually going to come up against guys who are obsessed by winning the next Super Bowl, no matter how many they've already won. That's who you're competing with now. You're competing with Tom Brady, who doesn't want 8, 9, 10. He wants 20 if he can get there. I mean, he would take 20 if he could get there,
sure.
Although there's no way that's going to happen. Yeah. His high school coach, he could walk away from it tomorrow and be fine. Who did that? Andrew Luck did that. Andrew Luck walked away from it tomorrow and he was fine.
That's why we're talking about it. That's also why that would have been my next reason. You know, so I do think the Justin Fields conversation plays into this. I do. You know, I think everything you're saying, you're right. Yeah, he's going to be competing against guys that are going to do anything they can to get back to the Super Bowl. There's no doubt. And, yeah, the Andrew Luck thing is still fresh in the minds of everybody. I mean, hey, the Colts were one of the best teams in football. Should have been one of the best teams in football the last 2 years. They lost Andrew Luck. That's the reason they weren't considered that. You know, that conversation, again, was part of a quarterback conversation last year with Justin Herbert. Oh, he likes Oregon. He's never been out of that bubble there. You know, he's a really smart guy. He has other interests in life. He might quit. Everybody's scarred by that in the NFL, and especially when it comes to the number one pick. So, yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with what we're talking about here, but I do think there's a few factors that play into this. And, Mike, I feel like it's like a little where, yeah, it's like a Trevor Lawrence and his camp, they tried to play like the, hey, there's more to this guy. He likes life. It's not always just about football. And look, you know, yeah, he loves the game of football, but, you know, he likes all these other things in life, and it's backfired. And it's like, yeah, no, it's not cool. We're drafting you number one to win Super Bowls. We want to hear you desperate to win Super Bowls.
It's a corollary to the problem that can arise if a guy scores too high on the Wonderlic test.
Yeah.
Because if a guy scores too high on the Wonderlic test, the coach starts thinking maybe I'm not the smartest guy in the room and I got to worry about somebody smarter than me undermining me. I'm not saying it's the same thing, but it's just one of those good problem to have type things. I got a guy who's too normal. I got a guy who's too well adjusted. I got a guy who's too balanced.
Right.
I got a guy who wants to leave and go home and spend time with his family.
Yeah,
I got a guy who wants to take a day off and have more interest in life. I want a robot. I want a guy who is tormented and driven and motivated and here every day and is a fanatic and is rubbing off on all of the other players and inspiring all the other players. That's what I want. That's what I need. Otherwise, I don't satisfy my own unhealthy ambition to win as many Super Bowls as possible. I think that's the problem. You think Bill Belichick wants a guy who just, I can take it or I can leave it. And I know it wasn't quite that far, but it's kind of like, yeah, this isn't all my life. I mean, Belichick is constantly looking for guys who are ready to sign their souls over to football. That's what he's drafting for. He wants that guy who will make football the centerpiece of his life, because if he has enough of those guys, he knows he's going to win enough games to help him live out the fact that football's the centerpiece of his life.
Yeah, I understand that. And that's, you know, again, for Jacksonville or teams towards the top of the draft that, you know, I mean, it's not even a point in talking to them or talking about them, really just Jacksonville. Yeah, it's up to them to know the real Trevor Lawrence and what he's really made of. And what does Dabo Swinney say about the guy? What does the strength coach say about the guy? The guy in the training room, you know, what are they saying about Trevor Lawrence? That's going to give them all the answers they need as far as does he love football? Is he going to work at it? Is he going to do all those type of things? Listen, we have no evidence to say that he doesn't right now other than, you know, yeah, okay, his father said he's not all about Super Bowl rings, and the coach said he could walk away. All right, so, you know, yeah, I guess if we're going to dissect that a little bit, I understand it, but I'm not going to sit here and just, like, change my thought of Trevor Lawrence as a player right now just because of those, like, two quotes. I'm not. Everything I've seen so far is that he is competitive as hell. He does love football. You know, he did have a pro day when he didn't need to with a torn other shoulder and still did it. So that to me says, damn, the guy's got something about him that is right and worthy of being this one pick.
And again, when his dad says, I want to win a Super Bowl at all costs, that is a complimentary remark.
Yes,
it's that balance that I talk about.
Yeah.
When an adult acts this way, where I got to win, I got to win, I got to win, I got to win, we admire it. When a kid acts that way, we say, come on, grow up. Why are you acting like that? And that's the sweet spot. That's the balance. And it could work for Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I don't know whether I want to say that we praise it, but look at the reaction last year when the Jordan documentary was being played out a couple of episodes a week. I was fascinated by, even though we kind of knew how Michael Jordan was, I was fascinated by this glimpse into a personality where you take a highly talented individual and you throw in a warped and highly motivated personality that will look for any and all slights, and as I said earlier, make them up if need be to try to get the absolute most out of that skill set that has been given to him. Is that a necessary ingredient to be an all-time great? Look, Trevor Lawrence could be top half of the NFL for 10, 15 years or until he decides he's had enough and wants to move on. But can you be an all-time great in this day and age when you look at how Tom Brady is setting the bar, right? How do you get there without that? That's really the point. And now, Chris, over the weekend, and I'll just call it a coincidence. I didn't write about it until early Saturday afternoon, within an hour or so after that. Here's what he had to say. And of course, I can't read that because it's too small and I don't have it on my screen. But what he basically said was, people are misreading my sentiment. And then he reiterated his sentiment. Hey, you're misunderstanding what I'm saying. Here's what I'm saying. And what he said was basically the same thing he already said. He didn't change. Nothing in his three-part tweet, in my mind, changed anything that he said. I just think he was finally reacting to the fact that people were saying, hey, you know, he's not the maniacal, tormented individual that's going to be driven to get to the top of the mountain every single year. And at some point, it's going to make it hard to compete with the ones who are.
Well, yeah, I mean, but I, you know, see, I don't take it that far. That to me, he didn't say that. You know, all they're just saying is, to me, is like, really in that second part of the tweet. I don't need football to make me feel worthy as a person. Like, that to me is where it stops for me. You know, we can read everything else into it, you know, but he tells you about he loves the working at the game and the grind and the chase and all of those type of things, you know. So, again, I think we're being a little nitpicky, and I also think we're being nitpicky here, which I understand because of the Justin Fields aspect. I think that's why this is blown up to this capacity, because Andrew Luck, for one, yes, he left. Justin Fields' love of the game was being questioned, right? But yet he was the guy that, like, got the Big Ten back in football. So that was stupid that it was kind of being questioned. But because that was questioned, now this has to be questioned off of that. And it has become really.
I disagree with you.
But this is, Mike, this story became a story because people started reacting last week going, what if Justin Fields said this? That's how it blew up.
Let me give you my mindset on this, because when I first saw that, I thought, screw this. I don't need this right now. People looking for something to say, oh, if Justin Fields had said this, oh, what would we be saying? That's why I ignored it for 3 days. I waited until Saturday, sat down, read the article, and what I saw in it has nothing to do with the blowback on Justin Fields and the question of whether or not Justin Fields loves the game and whether or not there's some racial aspect to the criticism of one and not the other. I looked at those words for what they are. And I look at the words in his follow-up tweet when he says, I don't need football to make me feel worthy as a person. That's a healthy attitude. That's the right way to be. But do you really think Tom Brady, after 21 years in the NFL and everything he pours into what he's accomplished, doesn't associate his identity with football? Don't you think one of the reasons the guy won't retire is that's who he is? What is he post-football? I don't think he wants to find out because he's been so tied to football. That's my point. When Michael Jordan retired, how many times did Michael Jordan come back to basketball? He quit to play baseball. Then he came back. Then he retired. Then he came back. Brett Favre, similar mindset, although he didn't quite have the same maniacal obsession to win, or he would have, you know, studied a little harder and watched film and practiced harder and not just shown up and played on game days. But my point is, I waited to let all that other stuff settle, because I didn't want to be influenced by, what if Justin Fields had said it? I wanted to read the words for what they were and process them for what they were. And again, I think he's got the right attitude. What I am interested to see is how the healthy, proper attitude will compete with the unhealthy attitude that we celebrate generally. But when you look at it more carefully, you say, that's really not a healthy way to be. That's what fascinates me about all of it.
Well, I get it. First off, like, both can be true. You can certainly, I understand you dissecting the comments he said and did those type of things. The Justin Fields aspect is real of it. There's no doubt. It's the reason we're still talking about this subject. It is. And to Justin Fields' defense, yes, I think a big deal would have been made of it if he did say something like this. Probably a much bigger deal. You know, so that's where I understand people having this conversation to a degree. But, like, back to your point with, like, all of this stuff. Yeah, Mike, I mean, I understand. I don't know yet, though. The kid's young. I want to see what he grows into. Like I said, Brady did not come into the league like that. He did not. He got to grow into this. He was grown into it by a coach who made him like that. So that could still happen to this guy to be like that, too. And like I said earlier, I mean, Joe Montana, yeah, I'm sure he was chippy. We know that to a degree. But the real chip was Bill Walsh, you know, up his butt all the time about being like, you need to be better at this. You need to be better at that. That was his chip. Terry Bradshaw, I mean, come on. What do you think he was really chippy about? Like, what was he really chippy about in the 70s? I mean, come on. He's not that way. But he won four Super Bowls. Yeah.
And he had no relationship with Chuck Knoll after that. So whatever Chuck Knoll did to get the most out of Terry Bradshaw, number one, it worked. And number two, it destroyed the relationship. Wow. Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Whatever Belichick did to Brady, it worked, but it destroyed the relationship.
Right. So Urban Meyer, get working. Start trying to destroy your relationship and make the player a better football player. Okay.
get to work and make this guy great. But that's all I'm saying. You could grow into that type of guy too. Like it can, it's there. It's within them, you know, but like even with Michael Jordan, I don't think he was like that right away, but then it became, wait, I'm awesome and I'm getting disrespected and I didn't win the MVP and everyone's saying I can't win a championship and I'm not going to be, and he starts to take it all in. And that's where he starts to go like, okay, I wrote your name down. I remember you. Screw you. Screw you. Hey, you're on my team. Screw you too. You need to be better. And that's where he went off the charts crazy that way. And I'm not saying, you know, Trevor Lawrence, I think it's in him. We'll see. We got to continue to evaluate here.
And you're right. Brady's fire was ignited by falling all the way to pick number 199 and having six quarterbacks taken in front of him. When they ultimately make a documentary called The Brady Six that focuses on what happened to the six quarterbacks who were taken in front of Tom Brady, you know that he was motivated by it. And from time to time, we both interviewed guys who were taken later in the draft, and they keep a list on their wall of all the guys taken in front of them. The Michael Thomas effect, you know, with the receiver.
Right.
It's better to not be the first receiver taken, so then you've got a chip on your shoulder about not being the first receiver taken. And it's way better to be a second rounder than a first rounder, because then that lights the fire for the guy whose talent is equivalent to the guys who were taken in round one. That's all part of the dynamic. And maybe with Trevor Lawrence, and look, when I reacted to the tweets that he had on Saturday saying, well, the guy's kind of got a chip on his shoulder over the question of whether he's got a chip on his shoulder. Maybe that's where it all starts. Yeah. I don't know. But I think you make a great point. Just because he feels that way now, I mean, think about anyone. When you're 21, 22 years old, starting into a profession, I remember when I started practicing law, I had a mindset, and you quickly realize if you want to be as successful as you can be, that mindset's got to change.
Yeah, right.
You have to change your ways. You got to commit yourself. You got to step up. You got to get there early. You got to stay late. Oh, I didn't know it was this way. And along the way, you mature, you develop, you have a different set of priorities.
That's right.
You ask yourself the tough questions. Do I really want to be great? Now that I'm here, I understand what it takes to be great. Jameis Winston to the buffet line at the Pro Bowl. Big old plate of eggs and ham and sausage and bacon. Sees Russell Wilson coming back from a workout. Well, if I want to be great, I got to go bust my butt and not be eating all this food. Those are the things that you realize on your journey. And I think maybe that's the answer here, Chris, now that we've talked about it for a half hour or thereabouts. Trevor Lawrence is so early in his journey, he doesn't realize what it's going to take.
Exactly.
To get to the top of the mountain and stay at the top of the mountain. And at some point along the lines, he's going to have to ask himself, am I willing to throw overboard this balance, this healthy attitude, and become a nut job in order to be the absolute best player I can be year in and year out.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I think, you know, to that point, Mike, and what we're saying there a little bit is just, he's had nothing. He's been at the top of the mountain. There's nothing for him to be looking at right now to be going, man, I feel cheated. I feel this. He's been king. He's been the king of college football for 3 years now. I mean, we've been talking about tanking for Trevor for 2 years as far as that goes. So there hasn't had that. But I think, again, we'll see. Can the coach bring that chippiness to what you said? You get to the NFL, you start to realize it's a different animal as far as competition, what's needed to be done on a daily basis to be the best, be the starting quarterback. Wait, I don't want to just be the starter. I want to be great. Oh, I got to take it to another level. I mean, all those things are going to kind of slowly hit him in the face here as he continues to grind and work and everything like that. And he's going to need someone to show him the way a little bit, whether that be a great coach or like Jameis Winston just recently said, right, about Drew Brees. He got to see it, witness it, do all that type of stuff. And again, even with Drew Brees, I would argue, hey, I know it was in him, but he got around a guy like Sean Payton that was psycho too, and he was like, wait, this is what it takes? Okay, we got to be psycho together? All right, let's do it. Let's go work on, you know, throwing for 5,000 yards every year. So there's a few things that I think go into the formula of making this person like this, like we're talking about with Brady or Jordan or something like that. And I just don't think Trevor Lawrence has had that yet. And I think they just tried to play the cool, like, hey, this is a cool guy. You know, he loves football. He's awesome at it. But there's more to this guy. He's deeper than that. And it's backfired, and now they've kind of been on, you know, damage control a little bit. Like, no, wait, I do love football. I love it a lot. I mean, I'm cool still, but I love it a lot. And I don't want anybody to forget that. And I feel like that's
what happened.
And again,
I think it's good that he's this way.
Yeah.
And this is going to be an interesting journey for Trevor Lawrence. And maybe they'll do an update every year or two as to where he is from his mindset. Has that changed? Do you still feel the same way? What time do you get up? How much time are you spending in your playbook? How much time do you take off in the offseason? Are you Ben Roethlisberger, who doesn't throw a football for months? Or are you out there with your helmet on like Tom Brady, filming it and putting on social media as you're throwing the ball to anyone you can find who will come and catch your passes? That is going to be the interesting part of it. What does he see? What does he learn? And you mentioned Urban Meyer.
Yeah.
This isn't a guy who's coached at the NFL level ever before. Is he even equipped to impart to Trevor Lawrence the things he needs to be to become a Tom Brady-level maniac? Not that that should be his aspiration, but I think we agree. Where he is right now is healthy. Where he goes from here remains to be seen. But like in any other profession, as you get into it and as you migrate through it, there are certain points where you have to make a decision. Am I going to put in more time? Am I going to put in less time? Am I going to get more upset about a day when we lose? Or am I just going to say it wasn't meant to be? That really, how you deal with adversity is the key. You know, with Kyler Murray, we talked about that a couple of years ago. He'd lost three games between high school and college. How's he going to deal with losing games on a regular basis in the NFL? I think Trevor Lawrence is going to have to go through that as well. Is it going to make him double down, triple down, quadruple down? Or is he just going to say, it wasn't our day? And I think he's, I think it's more likely that he will change over time.
Yeah.
But the snapshot of where he is now, I think I agree with you. It's a product of everything he's experienced. And he hasn't experienced adversity. He hasn't experienced criticism. He hasn't experienced being dissed. He hasn't experienced being regarded as anything other than the number one pick in the draft for 3 years now.
That's right.
So, yeah, this is exactly where he should be.
Right. It's just he's got nothing to look at right now to feel like he's been slighted or cheated or anything like that. And I think a lot of the times that's what it takes for athletes is that type of thing. You know, let's go to LeBron James. You know, he didn't seem like he really had that until, wait, you're losing finals and you're supposed to be the best player in the NBA and you can't get there. And then he became a psycho. And now, you know, that's all you hear about. That's all he's talking about. Basketball, do this, make this play, all that. So I think there's that element that has to happen, you know, in the sports player's career to where he feels cheated or wronged or slighted some way. To then start to get into the, you know, screw everything else, I got to do what I got to do to win, you know, type mindset or type of way of life. And, yeah, I just don't think Trevor Lawrence is there yet. Hasn't had to be. Maybe he won't have to be. Maybe he'll live the charmed life and just be the man and be on top of the mountain forever. We'll see. That would be very unique. But, yeah, right now he's got nothing to deal with.
It's that conversation that you have with yourself. And we all have it at some point, whether it's job, school, hobby, whatever. If I want to be the best that I can possibly be at X, I got to make the commitment to it. And you don't really want to. You don't really want to. You're kind of happy with the way your life is, but you want to be better at that one thing, and you got to have that conversation. And it's not an easy conversation.
No.
Because you got to resolve to put more time, effort, care, everything into it. And you still have to try to strive to have a healthy balance in your life. And that's the problem. When you focus too much on one thing, it can throw your whole life out of whack. And I think we've seen that with Tom Brady.
Definitely.
There have been times where he's thrown his life out of whack. He talked about it candidly with Howard Stern.
Sure. Seen it with Michael Jordan.
Possibly just about a year ago today.
Right.
Michael Jordan, same thing. There's a price to be paid for being obsessed with winning, and I think we've come to a good place.
We talked about it. We worked it out.
Why he is where he is,
right?
But it can all change, and once he gets a taste of losing at the NFL level, and it will happen. How will he react to it? How will he deal with it? What will he learn from the examples that are set around him? And it may take his second team. I'm not saying he's not going to be with the Jaguars for 10 years, but you never know. But maybe it's going to take, or maybe another, bring in a veteran quarterback or a different coach or something to really unlock that understanding of what it's going to take. But we'll see how that plays out. There are plenty of other quarterbacks in this year's draft class. We know that Trevor Lawrence is going to Jacksonville. We're going to play matchmaker with some of the others when PFT Live continues.
Matchmaker, right, matchmaker, make me a match.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
For the world's greatest athletes,
this is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again!
Goal for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics, this summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
The Premier League is built on hope. The hope of discovering a new star.
It doesn't take long for Darwin Núñez to make an impression.
The hope of rewriting history.
Leaves his calling card.
And the hope of continuing a dynasty.
Unstoppable week after week.
This is the Premier League on NBC, USA and Peacock.
Plenty of great quarterbacks in this draft class, and the market keeps changing. March 29, Trey Lance, the favorite to be the third overall pick. Then, Mac Jones, prohibitive favorite as of April 8. Now, Justin Fields, minus 110. So, Sims, you're the one that drove the needle to Mac Jones being minus 200.
Oh, okay.
I don't know, and I don't know what caused Fields to be. Was it just his pro day workout? Pro day workout, and there wasn't one of those throws that made Kyle Shanahan have that Larry David moment where you cue the Curb Your Enthusiasm theme song with the overthrow, but Ohio State was very selective about what was allowed to be seen coming out of the Justin Fields pro day, but I think it was the reaction to that pro day that caused people to push Fields back up to the top of the stack from a betting standpoint.
It seems to be that, you know, the fact that Shanahan was there for that workout, the fact that people think because Shanahan and Justin Fields were at a camp together 4 years ago, that means something there that way. So, again, it's going to be interesting to see where this all goes. It really is. You know where my money still is at this point, but it's fun to watch kind of the markets flip and the conversation go. And there's a lot of heated conversations over this number three pick right now in sports media, that's for sure.
What we're going to do for now, we're going to take the name of the quarterback and match him with the team, regardless of draft order. We're not going to try to crack the code on how the names come off the board. Just right now, gut feeling, Justin Fields, where do you think he ends up? Which team?
Like, I'm really in a like tough spot here. I don't know. I don't. Like, I don't think it's going to happen at number three, as you know. I don't think it's going to happen at number four with Atlanta, right? I look at that. I don't know. In my heart of hearts, I don't see Denver going quarterback at number nine. I just don't. I feel like, man, it's Vic Fangio. Does he want to deal with a rookie quarterback situation? I mean, he's going to get fired if they do that this year. That's over. So I don't look at it that way. Okay, so, like, I know I'm supposed to give you a quick answer here, but I'm kind of fleshing this out. I mean, then I start to think about, all right, New England at 15, you know, Washington at 19, the Steelers at 24, you know, and, of course, these teams can move up, you know, for a trade at some point or do that. I feel like he's not a New England guy. That's just how I feel there. Will Washington really take another Ohio State quarterback after the Dwayne Haskins conversation? Do you think they would do that? I don't know. For my heart of hearts, I want to say Pittsburgh. He ends up in Pittsburgh, makes a play to move up a little bit, and then Justin Fields.
Something.
That's what I'm saying.
Now, if Pittsburgh loves him,
yeah,
okay, they'll go get him because they have traded up for guys they loved.
Right.
Troy Polamalu, Santonio Holmes, Devin Bush. They trade up to get the guys they love. So if they really do love him, I don't rule that out. I think it's simpler than that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think you're missing the obvious one. And this is a little bit of psychoanalysis on my part, but
Detroit?
I firmly believe Detroit is going to take him.
Okay.
Because number one, Chris Spielman, whatever his specific title is, assistant to the traveling secretary, special advisor to the owner, I'm not quite sure what it is, but I know he's got a lot of juice. And he's got a strong personality. So does Dan Campbell. And remember, the true sign of an alpha is to know when to back down and concede and know that another alpha has made the decision. But I think the Ohio State connection, I think Spielman's going to be privy to more information about Fields than the rest of us, and it's going to be good information about Justin Fields. And I also think Spielman, he's not going to admit it, but Jared Goff, this guy, not my kind of guy. And I think Jared Goff is a Band-Aid that they took on the contract. They're spending the money. They picked up an extra first-round draft pick to get him. Let's not forget that. 2 1s and a 3 to take on Jared Goff and to give up Matthew Stafford. I think they're looking for their future, and I think it's going to be very difficult if Fields is there at 7 for Spielman to say no. That's where I think he's going to go with the Lions.
Well, it's a possibility. You lay it out the right way. I mean, you do. I'm really interested to see if they do go that route, kind of like what you're talking about. You know, to make that move for Jared Goff, yeah, the money they're going to be paying him. I understand that, you know, the Rams took some of that burden, but I know this is one of those where I'm not sure where Detroit goes there. I'm really not sure where they go with this conversation. So I look at that, and I don't know where Justin Fields ends up either. I really don't. I think it's going to be really interesting, and I think that's where there could be some major play here in the first round. Because what if a guy like him is on the board? But all right, you say Lions, I'm saying Steelers later on in the round.
All right, Mac Jones, do we need any time? Can we bank our time from this one? I know what we're both going to say.
Yeah, I'm going Mac Jones. There's no doubt about it.
You're going 49ers.
I'm going 49ers, Mac Jones, without a doubt, 100%. I haven't changed my thought on that at all. Definitely not. Listen, I feel in like my heart of hearts, you know, yeah, of course I feel like it's Mac Jones. From the history of knowing my friend, you know, from the simple fact that I don't think you trade up that far in the draft to go after two guys who, yeah, have a lot of talent in Trey Lance and Justin Fields, but there's definitely some major questions about them too. Like, they're real. And to me, Mac Jones is kind of like a ready-to-go, proven commodity and fits, I think, the mold of what Shanahan wants at the quarterback position. So, yes, I think Mac Jones, 49ers, all the way.
I don't think that Kyle Shanahan makes a decisive move a month before the draft unless he knows damn well who he wants.
Right.
I think back to 2006 when Mike Shanahan traded up to get Jay Cutler during the draft while the pick was on the clock. That is just both hilarious and disturbing.
It is.
But that's what he had to do to get Cutler. You don't move to that spot ahead of time because there's no guarantee the board's going to fall your way. Kyle doesn't have to worry about how the board's going to fall. He knows how the board's going to fall. Lawrence Wilson, 1-2.
Yeah.
The guy I want, I'm going up to get. He didn't go up to get the third overall pick so he could spend the next month saying, oh, I got the third overall pick. Hey, what am I going to do with it? We'll figure that out later.
Right.
You don't give up 3 1s and a 3 to go up for, well, we'll evaluate the three guys who are up there now and pick the best one. No, you already know before you make the move. There's no way you make that move without knowing, Chris.
No, agreed. Like, I don't think you make that move unless you're, you know, basically 95-98% like positive that's what you want to do. You know, I do. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I like this guy. I'm going to do this. I'm going to continue to do my homework on the other guys because, you know, there's some like big time talent traits there. There's no doubt about that. Do my homework, do my due diligence. But I would think, yes, you don't make that move unless you got your eye on somebody to go, wait, that's the guy I want. I want to make it for that guy. Yeah. You might like the whole group as a whole. Okay. I understand that. That gives you a little cushion. But I would think one guy was in mind when it came to making that trade. And that's where, yeah, I still go to Mac Jones. And, you know, where people got to bought back, like Mac Jones, I understand people think like, you know, hey, face level to face level, Justin Fields, yeah, he's an Adonis. Mac Jones looks weird in his uniform. Looks like nerdy white man can't jump guy. I mean, that's what it looks like. It's tough. I get that. Fields has a rocket right arm. But it can be totally inaccurate at times. He is a great athlete.
you know, where you look, Mac Jones is, you know, probably the most accurate passer in the draft, probably the best decision maker in the draft, you know, as far as moving in the pocket and manipulating the pocket that way. You know, it's him or Zach Wilson as far as the best in the draft at that, you know, pro ready, done all the schemes, everything like that. So it's all of that added together that gives Mac Jones kind of the eliteness of his game. Maybe not one thing, but it's a lot of real, real good that lets him play the position at an elite level. And I think that's where people are, at least in my opinion, misjudging him a little bit.
We're going to take a break and find a home for Trey Lance, the North Dakota State quarterback, and who will be the sixth guy taken. We'll talk about that when PFT Live continues right after this. Trey Lance thrown again today for scouts. That's Pro Day 1. Pro Day 2 coming up. All of these guys are having multiple Pro Days because you can't do private workouts this year. Atlanta Falcons reportedly sending the full contingent. Chris, do you match Trey Lance with the Falcons or someone else?
The Falcons, I just look at it and I just feel like they're going to stand pat with Matt Ryan for another few years. You know, again, that's kind of the way I envision it. You know, where he's at in his career, like we talked a little last week about this, Mike. He's got, I would think, at least two or three really quality years there to play like high-level football. And he fits within the offense of which Arthur Smith just ran with Ryan Tannehill in Tennessee. That's where I just think it matches. So, no, with Trey Lance, I think the team I'm going to match him with as we sit here right now, at least, you know, 10 days out from the draft, the New England Patriots. That's where I'm going to put Trey Lance. I could totally see him on the board around 8 or 9 and New England making a move to go up and get him. I think it's a perfect spot. The team's built to kind of play that type of football, and he can sit behind Cam Newton and kind of grow as a player. Hey, Trey Lance, we don't know what he is as a guy yet. You know, I mean, he hasn't played a lot of football, as we talked about. So, you know, he needs some time to sit behind somebody and grow.
Here's the key phrase from Peter King's Football Morning in America as it relates to the Falcons and Trey Lance.
Right.
What I'm hearing, Peter writes, owner Arthur Blank is fascinated by the quarterbacks atop the draft, thinking the franchise might not be in such an advantageous position to take one for years. But Blank will not force a decision, of that I am sure. Peter and I have debated that topic, I think it was 10 days ago, where and how Arthur Blank will put his thumb on the scale. I continue to believe that one of the billionaire privileges is you don't have to force a decision. There's a subtlety. There's a nuance to making what you want known. And I continue to believe 2008, Falcons were leaning Glenn Dorsey with the 3rd overall pick. Remember him?
Sure.
Arthur Blank wanted Matt Ryan. Arthur Blank got Matt Ryan. I don't think he forced the pick. He had a new regime then, new GM, new head coach, Thomas Dimitroff, Mike Smith, didn't force anything. But what the owner or the Arthur wants, the owner or the Arthur gets.
Yeah.
And I think he wants one of these quarterbacks, and I think it's going to be Lance.
Okay. All right. So you think they're going to go that? I mean, they're of course, have like the keys to the draft right now sitting there at 4. You know, they could do that, or they could take a Kyle Pitts. Somebody like that and add him to Julio and Calvin Ridley and Matt Ryan, and you go, oh, watch out, that offense could be one of the best in football. I mean, it'll be interesting. They certainly have some flexibility. I don't know. Maybe if they got a feel that they could trade down just a little bit of a ways, if there was somebody that wanted to get to 4 for some other type of player, like a Kyle Pitts or maybe a Penny Sewell or something like that. Maybe if they could trade down a few spots and still get Trey Lance, maybe that does happen. I don't know. I'm really interested to see what Atlanta does with that pick for sure.
You're right. They could trade down. You know, I'm thinking they could trade down to a team that wants a quarterback. They could also trade down to a team that wants Sewell before the Bengals can get him at 5. That's another thing you can do.
Right.
But you're running the risk if you slide down.
Yes.
Trey Lance may not be there, and you may get jumped by the Patriots or someone else
right.
as Lance is working his way toward you. All right. It's a given that 5 quarterbacks are going to be taken in round 1, just like 2018 when Lamar Jackson was the last guy in the round. I think they'll go before 32, before 32. Will there be a 6th first-round quarterback? And if so, who will it be?
Well, I mean, you know I think it should be Kellen Mond. I mean, that would be the 6th, without a doubt. I mean, to me, he's the only guy that's even left that's, you know, worthy of a first-round selection, in my opinion, when you just put it all together. Physical ability, what he's done, played on the field, all of that. Yeah. Listen, again, I think he's got some elite parts of his game. His ability to throw the ball, all different types of throws, he's going to throw the ball into tight windows, tight pockets, people all around him, all of that, I think it's really special from Kellen Mond. So he could be that guy where maybe a team trades up. Like if Atlanta didn't get a quarterback, right, would they be a team that maybe thinks about trading up late into the first round and getting a Kellen Mond? You know, would the Bucks do that at 32? I'll be interested. But I would say if I had to bet money right now, I would say Kellen Mond goes somewhere in those first few picks of the second round, even though I totally view him as a first-round selection.
As the sixth guy off the board?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I do.
I think it's going to be Davis Mills. I think the sixth guy is going to be Davis Mills.
Oh, if it is, I'll be disappointed in that. Davis Mills is like, he's knows how to play the position, but there's not a lot of high-level talent there. I mean, Kellen Mond blows him out of the water in every category. You know, Davis Mills, listen, he's a guy I talked about that could be that, you know, next guy off the board after Kellen Mond, but, you know, I'm not even sure if I'm sitting here ready to go. Like, I think Davis Mills can be a really good NFL quarterback. I know it's all gained steam here lately about what he's done. You know, he plays the position well. He's got pretty good size. He's got a barely above average arm, and he's, you know, a barely above average athlete. But it does seem to be picking up steam. I don't know. Listen, I don't know what makes a quarterback a first rounder anymore. You know, I really don't. You know, like Kellen Mond, his tape blows away Jordan Love's from last year. They're not even on the same planet, but Kellen Mond's not going to be talked about as a first rounder. You know, I thought Kellen Mond's tape blew away Daniel Jones. He was the sixth pick of the draft. I don't know, you know, so I don't really get it sometimes about the quarterback, the hype, and why it clicks for some guys in certain years and not guys in other years.
And the other reality, too, is all 32 teams have potentially different opinions on these guys.
Yeah, that's right.
They have no inclination to tell us what they really think for now, if not forever. Let's take a break. When we return, off-season workouts start today. Will they actually start today? All the latest on this ongoing fight between the league and the union when PFT Live continues right after this.
Fight, 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 fight.